The car you drive every day should be fun.
But it has to do the boring stuff too, like commute, be affordable, and haul your groceries.
You can have both, and we'll help you find it. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. The gentleman who bought my first Porsche Cayman S emailed me this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He popped up after a couple of years and just checking back in. Super nice guy. I'm going to give him a really a great shout out here. He said, "Hey, I'm selling your car." I thought, well, it's yours.
Wow.
But
yeah, seriously.
You know, he said, "I'm selling my car. I just wanted to check in. Hope you're well, all this stuff. And I'm selling it. It's up for sale because I bought a GT4." I went, "You've got to be kidding me."
Ooh.
So
the disease has struck with him. Where's he again? He's somewhere. He was a long way away from L.A. when you sold it. You sold it out of L.A., but where is he?
Yes, he's up in Montana, as a matter of fact, and he is the founder of a footwear company that is for outdoor trail and hiking. It's called Oboz.
Sure, sure.
O-B-O-Z. Okay. So they don't sponsor us, but I just wanted to give him a really nice shout out. So check out his footwear company, and they're really sturdy shoes. They're great. He even gave me free shoes and asked if I needed any more shoes in the email. He's been really, really kind.
Well,
and,
but he got a nice certified Paul-owned Porsche Cayman. I mean, well, your car, he got it for a good price, and it was super clean when you sold it. So, now clearly he's caught the bug if he's getting a GT4. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, he took delivery of it, and it's the same color as my GTS. And I went, oh, my gosh, this thing's beautiful.
Oh, wow.
And he said his wife wanted him to get the GTS, but he just had to go for the GT4. I'm thinking, good for you. Well done.
Wow.
And so I thought, you know what? I emailed him back and said, by the way, how much are you selling it for? And what's the mileage? Yeah. And have you had any problems whatsoever? Because I wanted to update everybody on the podcast. And Todd and I drove this car. This was our black Cayman S review, 2007 Cayman S. That was my car for about 3 years. And I sold to this gentleman. And we love the car. So that's if you want to see it. And it's for sale currently. He posted it on the Porsche Club of America site, as well as a bunch of other places. And so he emailed back and said 52,000 miles. He's asking $26,750, so 26 grand, almost 27 grand.
That's excellent
which is,
for that car,
pretty good price, 52 grand, 52,000 miles. And he said not one problem. I thought.
Now, what was the mileage when you sold it? How much has he put on it?
I sold it with 38,000. So he put about 15, somewhere 14, 15 on it, something like that.
Yeah, and he's had it a couple of years at least.
2 years.
So
he said the only thing it's done is tires. The only thing it's chewed through is tires. And I thought, well, of course. But other than that, not a problem. Yeah. And I thought that is fantastic news. It actually, the thought crossed my mind about buying it back and turning it into a track car. But then I thought, where do the dollars for that project come from? I'm
seriously,
not really
come
sure.
Come on. Come on. If we were a different show than we are, why not? But that's not the reality. However, I do find
back.
It funny.
How cool is that?
Exactly. Yeah, it would be cool. I do find it funny, though, that your former 07 Cayman S has fewer miles on it now than my 2013 FRS. So,
I
have little doubt. I have little doubt that your Cayman is in far better shape than my FRS is. Not that I beat on my FRS inordinately. I'm just not you. So, I know the quality of the car he got. It was gorgeous, but it's cool that it's come around again and he bothered to take the time to reach out. That's awesome.
I bet you he'd take 26 grand if you called him now. I bet you he'd take 26. Car's up in Montana if you want it. And black on tan. It's quite a car.
It's actually gorgeous. It's actually got some really cool kind of black accents in kind of non-factory planned parts on it, which really kind of sets it off. Yeah. I always thought the interior of that was really, really great. So that's very cool. Well, I mean, clearly the footwear business is good. He's buying a GT4, but bless him for buying a GT4. And clearly we've given him the disease.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's the other big part of this, but I think that's awesome.
Well, he had started following the show because of this. He didn't know, and I made him aware, and he's like, oh, my gosh. And then he watched the review after he bought the car, and it was great. It was really cool.
You know, we still are trying to get together. We definitely want to do a Generations of the Cayman video we talk the Cayman up so much. And the prices range so wildly from, you know, you can get yourself a $20,000 first-gen non-S all the way up to the GT4 Monster and everything in between. Be very cool. So hopefully we'll put that together. Kind of sparks me again to hear about that one being sold. But we'll definitely have to do that.
Definitely.
But guess what guess what we've been thinking about this week? You'll never guess.
I've just been sitting around eating bonbons. I don't know.
Nothing's going on. If you're listening to this on Friday, by the time you listen to this, you'll be about 24 hours away from us being on Velocity, our premiere on Velocity, and that is quite shocking. And the ironic part is, when we're playing on Velocity, we won't even be able to watch it because we'll be in LA shooting the last episode for this first season.
Yep.
So it's the amount of stuff that has gone on in this last couple of weeks before it. Gosh. I mean, that's why we're talking about it so much, is because it has tried to consume us. We are still pumping out content for the channel. We're still pumping out content for, obviously, this podcast and other things. But the amount of stuff that has popped up and been like, surprise, for television has been shocking. I wanted to talk about a couple of them because you asked a ton of great Facebook and Instagram questions all over the place. We do have two car debates coming, but I wanted to cover two TV-related questions right up front because that's where our head is. And both the questions kind of made me laugh because they're very thoughtful. So I appreciate it. They're responding to the fact that if you look at our website now, we have posted our whole first season listing. You can see what episodes are playing and what dates they're playing on. Three of those episodes you've never seen on YouTube. And the rest of them, I will fully admit, they are YouTube repurposed content. One of the questions came in from Lucky Jerk. He wrote in and he said, are you a Lucky Jerk? Anyway, he wrote in and said, how are we using those? Are they pretty much the YouTube version or have we changed them? In most cases, they are cut down and kind of slimmed down for television. Of course, they now have commercial breaks. In some cases, I actually think the episode wound up stronger. In other cases, I missed some of the content. Because I'm cutting from something that was 40 minutes long down to 22, and stuff just goes that I liked. Now, it's not that the piece is incoherent now.
It's the realities of going to TV. It's the realities of going and fitting in, and you've told me they have to be 22 minutes exactly, not kinda, not close. Yep. They've got to be dead on the money for, you know, filling that time slot. So that's why, you know, you've got to make those decisions. I'm glad that you are, but, you know, one of those things.
Yeah, so some of them – some of them actually play really, really well in the format, and others of them, they still play well. They still play coherent. I just know, because I know the piece, some of the little asides that got taken out. But I'm very curious to hear from you guys how you think it plays, because it's a little bit different format, obviously, and we're excited about it. So that's what's up. And then, of course, we do have those three out of the nine episodes that are airing, the rest are reruns. But out of the nine episodes, three of them haven't been on YouTube. They will make their way to YouTube. We'll keep you informed on that as soon as it happens. It's not going to be end of the year. It'll be not that far away.
Right.
So that's one question. And then did you see this one? I don't know what other videos you've seen, but Savage Geese wrote in on Instagram. And thank you, guys. I'm glad you're following the show. We actually really like your work. So thank you for writing in and following what we do. You said you set I can't blame you because this is a problem for me, too. You said you set your DVR and you're looking at the thumbnail and you commented to me that the thumbnail picture makes me look like I'm standing there kind of like an idiot and drooling, which is fair. I need to rant for a minute about that thumbnail.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it right here on Instagram. It's pretty funny.
Clear the schedule, because I need to rant. I have tried for like 3 weeks to provide proper thumbnail images for Velocity and elsewhere. My understanding was everybody was going to kind of feed off Velocity. Now, you guys need to kind of understand our deal is a little bit unique. It's similar to the deal that Mighty Car Mod's got and a few other people. If you look on Velocity's schedule on their website of things they're pushing, for example, you'll notice they aren't pushing us and they aren't pushing Mighty Car Mod. They're pushing their primetime shows that they produce.
Right,
the stuff they don't produce, they aren't really promoting. They're excited we're on, but because they don't have to make their own money back, they're not promoting us, really. Mm-hmm. So the thing about that is,
straight off,
while they're – yeah, exactly. While, because we get to keep the rights. That's the upside.
Exactly. Exactly.
So while they're not promoting us, they're, of course, taking in thumbnails and that kind of thing, and they're putting up all our content, and you'll see the descriptions and all that. Somehow, in all of this, I don't know who did it. But somebody went looking for a thumbnail before we provided them and used some side-by-side still of the two of us from an FAQ video like 4 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
They didn't even pick a good frame. I'm standing there in the middle of a word, so I look like I'm having a stroke. And you're standing there kind of looking at camera, kind of smiling. But the problem then is only half the frame gets used for the thumbnail. So now it's just me looking like I'm having a stroke. And it's awesome. Out of date. It doesn't have any cars in it. I don't know who went and got this thumbnail. It didn't come from us. But yet you guys are sending us, thank you, all of these images of, hey, look, you're on my DVR. And I'm like, well, yeah, my idiot brother version is on your DVR. So, yeah, we have some cool thumbnails that are out there. Actually, the ones that are on our website for all these episodes are those thumbnails. We've got a lot of other kind of show branding stuff that's out there. Hopefully you'll see that eventually, so don't have to look at me all season.
Yeah.
But well, thank you for those of you that are setting the DVR.
Yeah, thank you as well. I'm wondering if this just was pulled by somebody that needed something really fast, and I'm hoping the thumbnails that we've sent in migrate mm-hmm. to this, the proper
– Agreed.
You know,
Agreed.
The proper look, proper format, because we didn't have any control. You and I didn't even know this was happening. Of course,
no.
It's to be expected because they've got to pull something to start syndicating mm-hmm. this out for the DVRs, for the selection. But we didn't even know, and they didn't come to us and ask. It would have been nice to say, hey, guys, could you provide something, you know, that works, that you approve
sure.
of? This we didn't
yeah.
approve. It was just grabbed from somewhere. And
we're not hard to find. You can
whatever.
Email us quite easily. But we did
yeah.
actually get contacted this week by kind of an umbrella company, Gracenote, that actually deals with a lot of this stuff, actually contacted us in the last week or so, and they wanted to fill up their library for folks that are asking. So we sent them all the thumbnails that Velocity has. So again, this is me ranting about stuff that may not matter to you guys, but I'm out there, again, looking like the Frankenstein version of me representing the show, and it frustrates me, but hey, we are on. We're coming either way.
Exactly. And switching to a last bit of news here before we jump into the car debates here, and that is to give you all a heads up that some sponsorship and partner advertisements are coming to the podcast. Yes, they mm-hmm. are. We will preview them. They are Amsoil and Covercraft. They're friends of ours, and we're looking forward to promoting them. And they are, like I said, yeah. they're friends of the show. They're helping us out, and they're helping us make more content as well. And we get to talk about them, and I'm digging in. They're fantastic companies, and we're really excited to have these as partners with us, and more to come on that. But just wanted to give you all, as I said, a heads up. Those are coming. That's changing the structure of the podcast a little bit, but as you
bit,
know
yeah.
it, all the content, it's going to remain the same. Still write into us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com, and also on the mm-hmm. website, so everydaydriver.com. While you're looking at the TV schedule, send us a note mm-hmm. on there as well.
It's, tell
it's
me how much
up.
You dislike the thumbnail. We'd love to hear it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, but the thing is, these two companies are the major sponsors of our TV season, which we're excited about. So we're going to be discussing them a little bit here as well. So just want you guys to know that the reason we're talking about them is because we're fans of them. They're fans of the show, and it's allowing us to do more. So that's why we're going to do
Agreed.
It.
Agreed. Yep. That's just wanted to give you that. So let's jump into some car debates. So we've got time for questions. There's a boatload here on all mm-hmm. these social media platforms here. So
yeah.
we're
going
to try to get to
yeah,
a few
yeah.
of those. I've pulled some and we will do our best here. But let's just jump right in to Michael in North New Jersey, who's writing to us.
Yep.
The headline here is he's got the disease and he's shopping for his fiance. The good news
yes.
about this podcast is we get to talk more about SUVs. I mean, maybe there might mm-hmm. be some cars thrown in here, but it's mainly mm-hmm. what SUVs can I get for my fiance? But I want to start with him. He's a car enthusiast. He's got a 2013 Audi S6 with an APR mm-hmm. stage tune and downpipes. Holy moly. And get this, a 2015 Porsche 991 GT3. He takes it to the track and he said, I wasn't even looking to get one, but it sort of fell into my lap. And the story is not detailed here, but I would like to know, how does one have a 991 GT3 fall into their laps?
You know what happened.
Where?
You know what happened.
How?
I can guess. He went to the Nürburgring and ran into the dispenser that gives them out.
He bumped into the dispenser and maybe
because
shook one out accidentally.
Exactly. Because if you're at either the Nürburgring or Spa,
of
we
course.
Haven't found it. But apparently there's like a magical box somewhere. You walk around mm-hmm. a corner and they give you a GT3. Because for as rare as those cars are, they're everywhere in those two towns. You don't have one and you just feel like, why am I here? You know.
Still
so
been looking
clearly,
for it on
Michael,
Google Maps. Can't find it.
Yeah.
And the search remains.
Michael went there. Michael went there and got one out of the dispenser, I guess, and shipped it back. So it fell in his lap.
Hmm.
So he has that car.
I think
so
you're right.
As you said, he has the disease. He has cars he loves. This isn't for him. This is for his fiance. And we've talked about this a lot. There is a thing about SUVs. It's the best-selling market segment, and the small five-seat SUV is pretty much ruling right now.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
what she's
yep.
looking at. She currently drives a Nissan Sentra. Of course, they're getting her out of that. She wants a small SUV. She thinks, so she looked at the Nissan Rogue, and Michael went, please don't. Please, please don't. Honey, let me find you something. So he's building a list, and he's come to us for help. And so we're shopping for an SUV. I like it.
He's got one of the widest budgets, the widest budget range I think I've encountered so far. So get this.
Yeah.
35K all the way up to the Paul limiter of 55K. $20,000 spread in here. And he's given us quite a list that includes a lot of good stuff. A lot of the usual suspects, as Todd said, that five-seat category. Think Audi A5, X3, you know, even Macans, the Touareg, the Volvos. All these cars are in there. He even suggested the Audi all-road wagon, which is great. But I do agree that she needs – I think she's going to appreciate something a little bit higher, something like that. But, of course, the car she's coming out of, anything we suggest will be better. We are sorry that she drives a 2015 Nissan Sentra. Our hearts are bleeding, and we're doing our best to help her. We're thrilled to know the lease is coming up, and she's getting out of that car. It's Nissan's Corolla, and I've driven it.
It is.
And I rather dislike it.
Yes. Well, you know. But it's one of those cars like the Corolla, not designed for us. It's not.
No.
It's a transportation device.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
So the cool thing is, hopefully we can find Michael's fiance a car she really, really likes. And you do have mostly these five-seat SUVs on your list. You've got a couple of cars. I have a couple of all of the above. I've got a couple of cars I think you'd look at that aren't on your list. I have a couple of comments about some of the SUVs on your list because it's a lengthy list. And then I wanted to also comment about some of the SUVs on your list that I really think you should avoid. There's good stuff here, though.
Well, he's got the New York Auto Show coming up for 2017 to go check some stuff out. And I think Michael, your big point is not to have to go to a bunch of dealerships to try out all these various cars. I mean, at the dealer or at the auto show, yes, you can climb into a lot of them. But of course, test drives are kind of out the window. So you are going to have to whittle the list down after hearing our suggestions and then go at least go sit in, you know, the handful, the select few that you're really interested in. And then you are going to kind of have to go to various dealers. In a lot of cities, those dealerships are generally close by. They sort of have dealership row, kind of depends on the town or city you're at.
Sure.
But generally speaking, car dealerships are cloistered together. And so it kind of makes it easy to go shopping, you know, for a Saturday. So think about that. But man, what a list. He starts off with the F-Pace, the Jaguar F-Pace, which is something she really liked when it came out. Mm-hmm. He's got the all-road wagon on here, as I said. Man, Mazda CX-9. Land Rover Discovery.
Which is the biggest one on here. But yeah, we've got a range between the small-ish wagon in the A4 and the big seven-seaters like he's got, Audi Q7 and Mazda CX-9. And we've got that full range to cover. I mean, there's so much stuff here. Keep going.
Discovery, Grand Cherokee, Mercedes GLC. Of course, you've got to have Cayennes and Macans on the list, but I do want to speak to those. Touareg, XC70, XC90, and you even suggested a GMC Terrain. So you're very much all over the map. Oh, and a Hyundai Santa Fe. So it seems like you're kind of listing just a lot of cars in this category, and we definitely want to help you kind of, like I said, whittle things down so you've got, you know, something to go target. And then your last, you had a follow-up email here saying, your friends can't stand the way the MDX drives, the Acura MDX, so you're not considering Acura SUVs, so that's fine. That's totally cool.
Yeah.
I admit my list of six here is still pretty long, but I'll get through them pretty quickly. And I kind of ranged from we changed our minds and we've got to go pretty inexpensive all the way to spending all of your budget. So I'm going to give you a range here, but it's all for consideration that I think are
excellent.
They're noteworthy. And they will be at the show, so you can really target these cars and sit in them and then think, okay, what do we really like? And then go drive those. All righty. So starting off on the lower end of the scale, but hey, it's a Kia. It's the Niro. The 2017 Niro. Pretty impressive. Okay. I'm impressed with Kia across the board. Kia makes me happy. I don't know why. Porsches.
Kia makes me happy.
It's a tagline.
All right.
That's a shirt.
It is. It's sold right next to the one that says Lincoln nothing to see here is Kia yes. Makes Me Happy. Yeah, and the Kia Makes Me Happy shirt has to have the hamster on it. I don't know why, but it does.
Of course it does.
So, yeah, okay, onward.
I mean, Porsches and Kias, what is wrong with me? I
people are checking, and no one really knows. People know are either. Checking.
All right, so the Niro, I like the styling. I guess a lot of their designs are pretty appealing to me, and they stand out to my eye. And I think it's probably because I know a lot of the people who work at Hyundai and Kia, and I know that about the design talent that I've alluded to before, they've got a lot of professional, excellent designers, and I'm noticing what they're doing. And so I think it stands out to me, and I can reason with and see their thinking rather than just, you know, some crazy lines and crazy shapes and, hey, well, we tried this for this model, and we'll do the refresh in 4 years, and we'll try something different. A lot of car companies kind of do that, and I'm seeing a cohesiveness in these brands. So
yeah.
Anyway, enough love.
Their designs are very coherent. They're very they feel like everybody worked together on it and made something that does feel coherent. I go with you on that for sure.
Agreed. All right, so enough love for Kia, but moving on to something other that has intrigued me. Michael, you mentioned the Grand Cherokee, but what about the Jeep Compass? The brand new refresh, the brand new design is sort of like a miniature Jeep Grand Cherokee. And I kind of dig it. I kind of like the looks. I'm just saying. They're on the lower end of your budget scale, but hey, you might like it. I've never been a fan of the Compass. I think they've been horribly ugly and probably horrible cars. But the new one kind of intrigues me. So I'll just leave it at that.
Well, but it was nowhere. It's a classic category of nowhere to go but up.
Well,
they've gone up. Congratulations.
But they did. But at least they did.
Yeah, but... Okay, fair, but I can't back your play there. I see why, but I can't back your play. Keep going.
I'm intrigued by the styling, I suppose. All right, so F-Pace, mentioned the Jaguar F-Pace, and you mentioned she liked it too. So if that's the case, please go drive one. You don't have to go crazy and fully loaded out to get one of those cars. XC60 is something that's really intrigued me too, the brand new XC60.
I agree. That's a great one.
Now we're stepping up into your comment about interiors. You want something that you'll live with for a long time, and the interior will be great for a long time. I think the new XC60, if sitting in the new 90 is any indication, then the interiors, they're just killing it.
Agreed.
It's jewelry, like finely crafted jewelry. I think BMW interiors sort of are second best to Volvo, to be honest. I hate to say that, but...
Volvo's killing it. Volvo is right up there with the best in interiors right now. I totally agree with you. I'm glad you said XC60. It's on my list as well for the same reason. I don't think you buy that car because it's some dynamic powerhouse, but I think the space is surprising and the interior is fantastic. If you want a nice, classy car that you can feel like you like it for a while, that's where I think the XC60 really climbs in this list for sure.
I think it's going to be pretty awesome, to be honest. And the seats. Mm-hmm. We love Volvo seats. They're going to be amazing.
They do great work in seats, for sure.
All right, so I had to have the Macan S on here. I've eyeballed these cars. They're 50 grand used, slightly used. They're right at about 50. Yeah. I would suggest driving it just as a benchmark, not because you think you're going to go buy one, but as a benchmark, and think about size and think about dynamics while you're driving this car.
It's
interesting, and I'm not going to spoil what we said for one of our television episodes coming up, and that was with my Jeep Grand Cherokee and the Mercedes GLA AMG 45. The Macan S was in the
discussion.
Mix, so I'm just putting that out there. And then finally here, my wild card is Mercedes GLC Coupe. It was the black one that you and I saw when we were shooting those cars in the parking lot. I've just kind of kept looking over at it and going, huh. It's the smaller GLE coupe, but it's still the four-door SUV coupe shape.
It's the Mercedes X6. It's the Mercedes X6.
The GLE is.
I can't give them a pass.
This is like
I can't
the X4
give them a pass.
Almost. This is even smaller.
But, okay, fine. But the point is, slightly coupe body shape on an SUV ride. I still don't know who these cars
are. It's not for everyone.
I agree.
But I just kept looking at it going, huh. I'm just curious. I haven't made a decision yet. But she might like it, and that's definitely brand new. On the higher end of your budget there, and the interiors. Mercedes is killing it on interiors as well. They're up there with Volvo. I mean, Audis have been there for a long time, but I think Mercedes and Volvo are really the two leaders currently. So
Yeah, their stuff looks great right now. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, lots of choices, but I wanted to give you a range just because you gave us such a huge spread.
Definitely. Yeah, no question.
Some of these cars might drive better than the other. It doesn't have to be the most expensive car that drives the best or appeals to you the most. So, anyway.
Well, but I get the impression clearly here. I think that's great. I get the impression clearly here from Michael that we're worried about the place to be of this. We're worried about the styling inside and out. Mm-hmm. Michael would like it to be decent to drive, but that's not his fiance's first interest. And they want to have a car that you can get into for a while and enjoy, which is one of the reasons these are going to head, I think, toward stylish interior and exterior and just nice materials and that kind of thing. That is the only concern I have on the F-Pace. When I was in the F-Pace, and I haven't driven it, but I've been in a couple, and my concern is in some trim levels, it's got more plastic than you think. And that was kind of surprising.
Okay.
I felt like the XE, which is their 3 Series competitor, they hide the plastic better. But once they grew the body size in the F-Pace, I was kind of surprised at some of the things that were plastic and didn't feel that nice. I submit to you, if you got in an F-Pace and the Volvo X60 back-to-back, you'd pick the Volvo. Without driving them, I bet you'd pick the Volvo because of interior.
Just based on interior
so
alone.
That's something to consider. The F-Pace is cool. I think you should drive it. The Macan or a used Cayenne is going to compete in these interior areas for sure. You do have the money for either of those. I think they are worth driving. They're on your list. I want to run through a couple that aren't on your list, and I want to run through some of that are on your list that I think you should avoid. I wouldn't go Land Rover Discovery. Look, they're great, okay? Land Rovers make great cars. They're those cars that when they're brand new and you drive them around, especially if they have a little terrain park in the Land Rover dealer.
Oh, yes, right.
You just think, I must have this now. And then reality sets in. Especially you're saying to me you want a long-term car.
Air suspension.
This is the place
fixing.
Where this is the place where if you look at reliability ratings, they're always at the bottom. I hate to say it, but I'm just quoting what's out there. This is my concern when you say long term and Land Rover. I go and we're walking away. So that's some thoughts there. You mentioned GMC Terrain. I would say no. If you want something out of the GM lineup, you really should look at the Acadia. Now, I had a first-gen Acadia. They've done a refresh since then, and now they're on a whole other generation that I keep seeing a lot, and they look great. They look great. The interior's been improved. If you're thinking about a GM product, you don't want to blow the budget out, you should go drive that GMC Acadia right now. That is a worthwhile consideration and a surprisingly good amount of car, or SUV in this case, for the money. That's especially in the loaded-out versions, very nice inside and out. So don't do the Terrain. Go Acadia. The other ones I wanted to mention, Paul already talked XC60. I have to ask this question. You said Mazda CX-9. Cool, but if we're talking a range of SUV sizes, you have to look at the CX-5, especially the fact it just got refreshed. It's the first one to get Mazda's new interior that they're working through everything. They've revised the exterior. That is a great-looking car inside and out, and we've talked about it a lot. It's surprisingly dynamically rewarding. It's essentially the Mazda 3 chassis we like so much done in small SUV form, which means dynamically it does really well. I would say shop that CX-5, save yourself the money. Unless you need the 7 seats of the CX-9, I would just go smaller and enjoy it more. And then I have a wild card that I'm kind of surprised isn't on here.
All right.
And I will end here, Michael. You mentioned in passing here Audi A4 all-road wagon. You've mentioned that you have an S6 that you love. You mentioned that your fiance even likes the X6. She's thinking SUV. All of these things happen. I have to go, wait a minute. Why isn't the A7 on here?
Funny.
It's not an SUV. It's not an SUV. Obviously, I realize that. But it is a big car. It is a nice 5-seat, great place to be. You could get a used one for your budget all day long. If she likes that S6, I say look at the A7. You get the more usable big hatch back. It's great looking. That is my wild card, but I say if you're going to talk SUVs or at least big things, let's take a brief wild card excursion and drive an Audi A7.
A brief foray over here. That's awesome. That's awesome. I'm looking at the CX-5 too. I am loving the styling. It looks
great. I know.
Great.
It looks great. I was in the interior not that long ago, and their interior before wasn't bad, but they're doing that. The same thing every automaker does. When they refresh an interior, they put it into one model, and then it works its way out to everything
else.
The first model to get the revised interior was the CX-5. I saw it at the LA Auto Show last fall, and it is a really nice improvement. Their interiors already look pretty good, but this was a nice refinement. I think that CX-5, I know we beat on a lot, but that's because it's good. And the revised interior is nice. It is a lot better car for the money than you would ever think just hearing about it.
Wow.
So I think it deserves a serious look.
Front end's great.
I hear you.
Very clean.
I know.
Very tasteful.
I know.
Wow, I'm pretty impressed.
So yeah, I think it deserves a look on this serious thing. So hopefully something in there has helped you, Michael, and you and your fiance. I like the auto show idea because what you can do, the two of you together, if you have a list of things, you can start hopping in them all together. Forget how they drive for a second, which I realize is a weird sentence coming from me, but stay with me. The two of you hopping into cars, you will instantly take things off the list. Instantly. Because one of you will climb in and be like, I really don't like this for this reason, and it's off the list.
Yeah.
I bet you could take your list of 20-something vehicles and be down to 4 or 5 by the time you're done with the auto show. Now you can go, what do we like driving? What do we like over, you know, outside of the auto show arena? I think you could whittle it down quickly because those first impressions on interiors and especially even in exterior styling are going to matter.
Well, we'll jump up to Jeff's debate here. Jeff is up in Canada. And he writes in with a very interesting story here that is partially tragic, partially encouraging, but I would put Jeff in the category of BMW super freak based on his ownership experience here.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I love it. He's had a few of them. The most recent one is, and the current situation is the lease that he's got. He's currently got a BMW 335 XI with the M Performance Pack fully loaded. He had come out of another 335i and he just wanted all-wheel drive. So his situation is he's got two young kids and he needs to drive around once or twice a week, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And he's got to have all-wheel drive as well. So he's looking at BMWs. He's got this car. He's leased it, loving the car. And soon after he bought it, he had a collision with a deer and the car sustained a lot of damage. Apparently, even though it's been put back together, Humpty's been put back together now, it's fine. But of course, it's put a $5,000 dent in the wholesale value at lease buyout, meaning the sales guy is saying, doesn't make sense for you to just buy this out. Doesn't matter how much you like it. Go to something different. So he was
looking for a 10-year car.
Bummer.
He was, he was going to lease this car. When the lease was up, he was going to buy it out. And his thinking was, I'll have this car for 8 to 10 years. Well, now it doesn't make financial sense to buy the car out. And so that's got him looking in a way he's never looked before, even to the point he's looking away from BMW, which, wow. All right, Jeff, based on your car history here, I am a little shocked, but I want to encourage you there because, of course, we have the disease. And part of that disease is branch out. But he's looking for what should be next, and he's hoping to duplicate his plan, meaning he'll lease something new, and hopefully when the lease is up, he'll still like it enough, he'll buy it out and keep it. So we are talking about a daily commute car. We're talking about kids, as Paul said, but we're also talking about he's an executive. It needs to look like a nice mid-level executive luxury car because every now and then he's driving people around for work and he has to have that perception. So we're not out buying something unexpected here from a look perspective. We're certainly not buying a coupe. So his top two right now are the M240i.
Yep.
And he kind of likes that, but he also happened to drive a Golf R and loved it. So he's debating, can an executive like myself show up in a hatch? I don't think so. He'd love manual if he can get it. All-wheel drive is a non-negotiable. So backseat and all-wheel drive, definitely. Manual if possible. And, of course, he's had a lot of nice cars. So technology, that's a little forward-thinking because this car is going to be around a while.
Jeff, I like that you're sort of struggling with the Golf R in the sense that it's all about perception. And I've told the story about my dad and, you know, the aviation industry that he was in and how, guys who own expensive planes look at an expensive car and think they're paying their insurance guy too much. Well, here you are in a sales role that comes with the expectation that you've got to have a luxury ride. And even though the Golf R is pretty awesome and pretty nice place to be, and it's a lot of fun, it's the perception issue there. So that's what we're dealing with is we've got to have something that fits that need. And you've even suggested here the S3, which is essentially all that Golf R goodness stuffed into an Audi. Which is interesting. Yes, I'm kind of up for that. But something stuck out here that you suggested is the brand new Mercedes-Benz C43 AMG, 9-speed auto. The interior is great. Of course, it is.
Definitely
a luxury car. It's a Mercedes-Benz
cruiser,
but it kind of has a personality. And I kind of think that you've hit the nail on the head here. This is, it's not the full 63. It's not the full angry monster.
It's just below that. Yeah.
And it's not the entry-level car. It's just kind of somewhere in here. And I like that you've noted this car. And I think every time when manufacturers do this, BMW is the king of this, but they come up with some market niche that you think, really, why are you suggesting this? And they've identified the buyer as you. And they're doing their research. I mean, these product planners are going, okay, so you don't want the entry level C. Nobody's really going to throw down, you know, unless you've got gobs of cash for that AMG 63.
Yeah, you want the full one, but you can't quite swing it. Let's get you the almost full version. Yeah, I get that. And we love the current C-Class. We really do. We've driven that 63, in fact, the 63S. Brilliant. I mean, a really brilliant car. The interior is great. I think that's great. Your concern is you're worried about the long-term reliability of Mercedes. If this was 10 years ago, I'd back your play. Now, I think they're at a place where their cars seem to run really well. Now, there will be maintenance. You're going to keep this car for 10 years. You need to look up places like Edmunds and other people that talk about what is the 5-year ownership cost. You need to research that because, but BMW as well. I mean, BMW, Mercedes, what is the long-term ownership cost? You get out of warranty, even if it is really reliable, it's just the maintenance intervals are costly on those German cars. That's certainly a consideration here.
Yeah, they are. And it just kind of seems like unless it's a Lexus or Infiniti, the maintenance cost is going to be decidedly higher. And you kind of got to pay to play, sort of. I hate to say it. I'm not calling you a foregone conclusion by any means, Jeff. I love that you love BMWs and German cars. I mean, I'm waving my hand right next to you, so I'm with you.
Yeah, seriously.
And I like that you've identified that you kind of are the target market for the C43, so I'm backing you there. But I've got two others that I want to just pique your interest with. Just consider them.
Good.
If you want to throw them out immediately, that's fine. We're intrigued by this Alfa, the new Giulia. But I want to direct you to the TI, the all-wheel drive TI, fully loaded. Okay. It's still in your sweet spot of the price range. As I said, does come with all-wheel drive, inline four with 280 horsepower, which is not slouchy. And it's so different. It's so interesting.
It is.
And intriguing. Yeah. Who knows about the reliability and the long-termness of it? It's going to be hard to say right now. I have high hopes. I'm reading the press release, and they say built by the best craftsman in Italy with the highest standards, and I want to believe you. I really do.
Yeah.
We
want to believe that the Alfa Giulia will be the car that is not only dynamically good, but also reliably good, and unfortunately, that would be a bit of a dice roll. You want to buy a 10-year car, Jeff, maybe this works, maybe it really doesn't. But, I hear you.
I mean, we could make the joke that, you know, is it reliable? Well, does it have an Alfa badge on it? Well, then, you know, you've answered your own question. So
that's the history, sadly, yes.
I hate to say that. But, like I said, high hopes. This is a different era. It's a different platform, different construction. Mm-hmm. All those Alfas, the Giuliettas, and all those cars in the past, they're in the past. This is new, fresh thinking.
It's a
fresh design.
Yeah.
And so I am rooting for this car. So just to intrigue you, go drive it, go see what the lease deals are and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's very unique. It really is.
I feel like if you got one, you'd be driving everywhere because, you know, everybody'd want to ride in your car. I mean, the end. So,
yeah. But brief aside here for Jeff, actually, one of the nice things, Jeff, look, I know you're looking for a car to lease and then buy out. I get that. But at the same time, if you did want to go kind of a personal wild card, you wanted to go for that Mercedes because you're not sure, you wanted to go for the Alfa and you're curious, because you are leasing, if it becomes a money pit, it'll reveal itself pretty quick.
Oh,
and it'll
sure.
be inside your lease. And so in your 2 years in, yes, you don't want to have your 10-year car anymore, but you can then walk away and have avoided it, just dodge the bullet of it. So there is that possibility as well. I would encourage you, if you're wanting to get something other than a BMW, then I think the nice thing about a lease is you've given yourself a little bit of a safety net to see, is this car going to be a problem that I should get away from? And you're still safe.
Agreed. That's good advice. So I want to leave you with one thought here, Jeff, and that is a wild card. I went looking for used cars. Todd, okay. You just heard Todd suggest an A7, but for you, I'm going to suggest an S7. What about a slightly used 2015 Audi S7 for $50,000? Twin turbo V8.
That's in the budget. Yep. He's hoping for 50K, maybe 60 on the high end. That's great. That's really good. I like that.
Wow. The seats, the tech, the power. I mean, you mentioned stuff about the transmission in here, and it's not going to be a race car, I guarantee you. But at least go drive the S7. I mean, you're going to have a really huge, strong desire for the RS7, but they're way out of your price range. They're way out of everyone's price range, apparently.
But the S7's got power, though. It definitely does.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a great car. Yeah.
I'm just wondering about lease deals on those brand new, but even just slightly used. You wouldn't believe how low the mileage is across the board, and they're all 50 grand. I'm going, I mean, 18,000 miles on one of them, 26 on another. I'm thinking, this is barely anything. I mean, you could have this easily 10 years, no problem.
Yeah.
Of course, maintenance.
Yeah, fair point.
Pay to play. We're back to that scenario. So,
true.
Audi S7.
I mean,
interesting.
You go the used. That is good. You go the used route. You can't pull off the lease thing. But I actually have a super wild card as well, and that's how I listed it. I listed it as my super wild card.
Oh, really?
I'm going to put it right here though, because you're bringing up the S7 for your budget. If you wanted, Jeff, you could get an off-lease Panamera.
You could.
You could find yourself a Panamera for $60,000. Absolutely. You would really enjoy that car. It's every bit of an executive car. You might have the other problem where it's like, we're paying him too much. But you could get a lot of car for the money for a Panamera. And I think that car, based on everything I know about the reliability, it would be reliable. Not inexpensive to maintain, but reliable. Not any weird things that would happen. I think you'd really like that car. But you're going to be a little bit older, probably older than you would for an equivalent S7, honestly. And of course you couldn't get a lease on it. So that's my super wild card. I have a wild card, a more general wild card I want to come back to.
The gold, silver, bronze, the presidential.
Exactly. I want to talk about some of the ones that you that you brought up, and I want to speak to those. Again, you drove the M240i in all-wheel drive, and you talked about how you didn't like the ZF8 speed, and you're kind of asking us, why does everybody rave about this transmission? What it sounds like you're responding to, though, you're talking about when you put your foot in it, it didn't do what you wanted as fast as you wanted. I think the issue is throttle calibration, not transmission. Because we've driven that ZF8 speed. We've driven it on a track even. When you're working the paddles, look, it's not a dual clutch. It's surprisingly close. So when you're really telling the transmission everything you want it to do, that ZF is great. I suspect that I don't know what the settings were on the car and those kind of things, but I suspect the issue that you're having is throttle calibration and not one of transmission response. So the ZF really is great. I'd be curious for you to have more experience with it. I think you'd be pleasantly surprised by it. However, because you brought up the Golf R, and you have like a whole paragraph here about why you like the Golf R, and then you went, except it's a hatch.
Funny. Some love
and you
here.
skipped over the S3. You just said, yeah, the S3 possibly as well. The S3 is your car. It is. If you like the Golf R that much, the one thing you lose with the S3 is you can't get a manual, but you don't really want a manual. I mean, maybe, but you're fine without it. The S3 is more of an executive-looking car.
It definitely is.
It is the Golf R with an executive sedan body on it. I mean, it isn't as dynamic as the M235i we drove, but we drove rear-wheel drive manual. You're talking all-wheel drive BMW with 8-speed. So I think at that point it becomes a lot closer battle. The S3, because you like the Golf R, I think the S3 is just, I think that's your car, honestly. I think that perfectly matches what you need. So I'm really going to push for that one. If you want to branch out, I think your C43 AMG is a good one. And then my wild card is, at least go look. Go take a serious drive of the Cadillac ATS.
Oh, really?
Because
no kidding.
Why not? I mean, look, it's one of the best chassis in the segment. You get the magnetic ride control. It has incredible handling. It has a unique look. It isn't a car that everybody has, and it's a great looking car.
Yes,
so
and Cadillac has stopped checking your birth year when you walk into the door of the dealership.
That's so true. That's true.
They're
now accepting anybody. Yeah,
yes,
there's no AARP cards or anything. It's great.
Exactly.
So I say definitely go look at the ATS. It may not be on your radar, but at least should be. That's my wild card because it fits everything you need, and I think you'd enjoy it.
It's very nice looking. I do agree. And magnetic ride. I could be sold on just about anything with Magnetic Ride. That is just,
I agree. It's fantastic. It kind of kills the segment, whatever it's in. Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Although the S3, that's still pretty cool. I mean, it's a bit of a sleeper, and you think, why is there an S3 and then there's an RS3 as well? And the RS3 would just be too boy racer, too punishing, too much. And
maybe,
they identify
maybe
this category. And it's like the AMG, the C43. It's like this mid-range category that is still hot, but they've dialed it back so it doesn't encroach. And I'm just amazed how product planning trickles down to the actual engineering of the car, because they will say, well, it can't do this. It's got to go really fast and do all this, but engineer it so it's just a little bit less than the, you know, the hot model. It's amazing.
Dial it back. Instead of being an 11 on a 10 scale, this one's running at a 9.5. Yeah, exactly. That's definitely how they're doing it. But the S3, I keep reading this whole description from Jeff about the Golf R, and I just keep going, Golf R with sedan body, S3, and we're done. So I think that's the answer. I really do.
Well, there are a ton of questions here on social media, as I alluded to earlier, and I've just got to jump right in from Bogdan here. He asks us if we've ever been scared as a passenger, and I think you mean on a track, and you're saying here not when just a car owner drives badly, but while you're on a track with a pro driver, getting hot laps, properly scared, and you know everything that comes with being scared, all those emotions.
Yeah, yeah. And hanging on for dear life, yes.
Yeah. You mentioned that Sabine took you on a ride in her Porsche. You are a lucky guy, sir. That
Seriously,
is pretty
yeah.
awesome to claim that you've got a ride from Sabine Schmitz. And I'm sure she was very fast and smooth, and that's when you know a driver is really pro, when they're not frantic and they're just, you know, they're still, you know, sawing away at the wheel, but they're not, you know, they're just not frantic about it. And their inputs are a lot smoother, and I guarantee you they're the fastest thing on the track. All right, so there was a time when Todd and I were at Motor Press Guild Track Day, and this was a few years ago.
Yeah.
And both you and I had this ride from a driver named Brian Heitkotter. You remember him?
I do remember him. Yeah, the guy from the Nissan Gran Turismo Challenge. It was that reality show that actually picked drivers at the end. He was one of the winners, yeah.
Yes, he won in 2011 at PlayStation GT Academy and has had moved on to becoming a pro driver for Nissan. And he was giving hot laps in the Nismo GTR, the hot one. And, of course, they wouldn't let any of the journalists drive it, but Brian was happy to take you for three laps as hard as he could go. And
he was thundering by everyone.
Oh
he had the general just like free pass rule all day long. Yes.
No kidding. So I jumped in with him, and we were at Big Willow up in Willow Springs track.
Mm-hmm.
And I glanced over when we're coming off the straightaway, that first left right there. I think it's turn one.
Yeah.
The first turn.
Yeah, turn one there at the end of the long straight. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I glanced over at a Speedo, and he lifted a tiny bit, and we entered the turn at 130.
Willow's a fast track, but that is a blistering entry speed on that corner. Yeah.
Let's just say he knew the car and he knew what it could do. But I'm also thinking to myself, homeboy's fast, but the car is pretty amazing here too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we enter at 130, and then for turn two, where it's up the hill in the horseshoe, I think I think it's turn two. He looks over at me while we're doing this, and he says, you know how the rule about slow in, fast out? Sometimes it's okay to go fast in. All right, Brian, you got me, buddy. You got me.
If you're driving the GTR, the Nismo race version, then feel free. Yeah, best of luck to you. Your four-wheel drift while all wheels are running. And bravo to him. He was killing it that day for
sure.
Oh,
my gosh. It wasn't so much that I was scared. I was just marveling at what he was doing and his intimate knowledge of the track and knowledge of what the car could do. I was marveling at all these things coming together for a brilliant lap because he knew the track, like I said. He knew right where he could place the car. But then I thought, okay, that's the car pulling us out of there with the power and the all-wheel drive and the way it works and all that stuff. And I thought, that's pretty amazing. I mean, this thing is a brilliant car. So they were just blistering laps, and I was amazed, of course. Yeah, he's definitely the guy. But I wasn't scared so much as just sort of, amazed and marveling at everything working together.
Yeah, yeah.
And definitely aspiring to do that. So that was
he was on it all day for sure. Yeah. For sure. Well, speaking of frightening things, I'm not sure why I got called out here, but Donald Smith wrote in to me only. He didn't write to you at all, Paul. He said, has Todd had accidents or close calls while driving other people's cars during shoots?
Yeah, I wondered why that is. Why is he just calling
me? Is it the red shirt? Why? What's the deal where you just think I'm the one that's having a problem here? What impression have I given you? However, unfortunately, I do have two stories. Here's the two stories. First off, very, very early on in the show, I'm imagining you remember this too, Paul. Very early on in the show, one of our very first press cars was a V6 Genesis Coupe. And I got that car, picked it up from Paul. We had it from the press fleet, picked it up from Paul. I took it on one of our really good roads in L.A., but I took it on one of those roads in L.A. right kind of during the first rainstorm of the year, which is when everything is overly slimy in L.A. And I did a corner wrong. I headed toward the wrong wall at the wrong time. This could have been horrible, but luckily I saved it just short of horrible. And the result was I dinged the front end. I mean, like almost dead center in the front bumper, I smacked the wall. Now, when I say smacked, I do mean like just beyond the range of a 5-mile-an-hour bumper. I got out and went, well, if we still shoot it right, it'll be fine. That car's in the video post-accident, so it's not post like I had smack. Major damage. So, but I mean, I felt so terrible because it was like our second or third press car ever. And we shot it. We got the whole shoot done because, again, the car wasn't damaged enough that you could even tell on video. But then we returned – one of my all-time favorite stories. We returned the car to the press fleet, and they all but ignored it. They were like, yeah, okay, fine, yeah, whatever. And they just kind of got in, drove off, and we still got other cars from them.
I couldn't believe that.
That was shocking to us.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, we see it, no problem, whatever. So that happened. And then there's the other one, the more expensive one.
Uh-oh, yeah.
That is very much not my fault. You remember this one? We drove a Tesla Model S here in Utah.
Oh, yeah.
The guy whose car we borrowed, he'd had it for a couple of months. He had it for a few thousand miles. He was with us. He was very nice. He was very accommodating. I was out doing drive-bys for that shoot. I wasn't doing anything weird, but it was springtime in Utah when there's a lot of junk on roads. And somebody's big 4x4 with big knobby tires was going the opposite direction from me in their own lane. One of their knobby tires picked up a rock and hurled it perfectly skyward, and it came down dead center of the windshield as I was passing them.
Oh,
I wasn't doing anything. I was just driving along. They were driving along, and I heard and kind of saw this rock fling up and nailed the dead center of the windshield, cracked the windshield. I had to come back and park this guy's, I've just gotten it, I'm excited about it, Tesla, and get out and be like, I need you to come here and look at your windshield. It's cracked. We will replace it. At which point, we discovered just how expensive Tesla windshields can be. What was the final tally on that? I remember it hurt.
It was right in the neighborhood of approaching $1,300 for a Tesla. Nice big piece of glass on there. Lovely compound curvature piece of glass that has all this built-in stuff, you know. Oh, my gosh.
Thank God that wasn't the one on the Model X, which I'm pretty sure would have bankrupted the show. But the Model S was a plenty expensive windshield. So those are my two stories, Donald. I hate that you picked on me, but I do have those two stories for you.
All right. So regular guy 81 just calls this out. Based on the photo on Instagram that Chance posted, does the Porsche 918 qualify for the hybrid car tax credit? And he's kind of being serious about it. I'm curious, too. So I went looking.
Yeah.
And indeed it is. There's actually three that qualify from the IRS, and those are the Porsche Cayenne SE Hybrid, the Panamera SE Hybrid, and our friend the 918 Spider. You get back $3,667. Not like you need it if you own one of those cars. I mean, that's
well, but that won't
tire.
Even buy you one of your options. That won't even buy you one of your options. You
no,
check
no.
one option box on that car, and it's more than your tax credit. However, why you're getting a tax credit when you're buying the 918 is beyond me. However, that means you probably could also get the clean vehicle sticker in California and drive in the HOV lane by yourself, which
that's
is
true.
A coup. That's the coup. That's even bigger than the tax credit. That's the thing you really want.
I really loved the Porsche 918. I wasn't quite sure, but man, that tax credit pushed me over the edge. And am I ever glad I got the 918 Spider. Man.
Said no one.
Said
That's
no one
never
ever.
Been said before right now. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it does. Great question. I was curious. And yeah, whatever. The IRS is having a field day with that one. They've got to be laughing. They've got to be.
Well, the 918 owners are the one laughing about that scenario.
Guess
but
so.
Yeah, I hear you for sure. Chad wrote in. Chad's actually been writing us a lot of good questions, but he said, I wanted to bring this up because his question, I read it and instantly thought of one. He said, what are some cars we've been pleasantly surprised by in one way or another? And I have to say, we don't call it out much on the podcast, though they're becoming almost disposably cheap. I have to say I was really surprised by the Fiat 500 Abarth. Because
okay,
not that long
one.
Prior, we'd driven the Fiat 500, mm-hmm. and both were not impressed at all.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I got in the Abarth, you know, I wanted it to be good, but I really didn't think it would be. And it's not as good dynamically as the Fiesta ST. If you watch our piece comparing them, the Fiesta is just better dynamically. But there is a personality in that 500 Abarth that is undeniable. And it's one of those cars that anytime I drove it, I had so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. That's a great one. That's a great one that I was surprised by because I just kept thinking, I don't want to like this car this much, and yet I can't deny it. It's great. So that's one for sure.
Yeah, the Alfa 4C is one for me, but it's a little bit of a foregone conclusion
oh, sure.
because it's a 4C. It looks great. You think, I'm going to like this yeah. as it is. I liked it a little bit more than I thought I would. I thought, okay, this mm-hmm. is a cool, fun little miniature Ferrari. I'll probably like it, but I
yeah,
really
yeah.
did kind of dig that car. It's got its foibles and flaws and, you know,
yeah.
nothing's perfect. Nobody's perfect, but I, yeah, I was intrigued by that. It's definitely not on the scale of the Abarth, though, really. And that makes me wonder about the Fiat 124, the Fiata.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just,
yeah.
I'm wondering about the engine. I'm wondering about having turbo punch in that car. I'm very curious about this. It almost seems
yeah.
like the less expensive, smaller cars have more room to run to surprise you to be good because if it's
fair.
A big expensive or it's a fast Porsche or something, well, of course you're gonna like it. I mean, right? I mean, you're
yeah,
gonna have
there
to
is
dig
that.
Deep to dislike something like that. That's expensive.
Sure.
Right?
Well, there is that thing where you take the full-on economy car that isn't dynamically interesting, and then to be able to take that platform and make something great out of it. You're right. The leap is a lot farther. I take that point for sure.
Yeah.
But the, yeah, that I mean, that Abarth, and people have been sending us postings they're finding of those Abarths are 10 to 12 grand you can find them. That's shockingly good deal for a very fun car if you can find one of those for that.
Track car. That could be
well,
interesting.
Yeah, or it's practically just it's almost the disposable winter beater, you
mm-hmm.
know? It's almost the there's your fun car for wintertime. I know I just recommended a little small pocket dragon for wintertime, but hey, I'm the guy that drives an orange teenager's car. So it works out. Yeah, in my mind, if you know me, that actually made some sense.
It kind of does. All right, KG Mustang coming in on Instagram as well. Wrapping a car or plastidipping? Which is better and why? I'm not much for this plastid dipping craze. It's not even a craze. It's just here and there.
It's a
people
thing.
Think it's a
it's
great
a definite
idea.
Thing.
The plastid dip stuff is great on those lifted Wranglers, the Rubicons and all those perfect for that. When you're just
okay.
throwing rocks and mud and all that kind of stuff and you clean your car with a pressure washer, then you know plastid dipping is for you. But
okay.
not on a car. It ruins the lines, it ruins the sculpture, it ruins everything for me. I'm all about
it
wrapping
mutes
a car.
Everything a bit.
I'm all
yeah.
about it because it's
yeah.
temporary. They should last 5 years somewhere in that neighborhood still, and you can be really creative. It's like wearing a wig for 5 years or something. You can just
mm-hmm.
be somebody totally
mm-hmm.
different. Halloween for your car or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's,
well, you think about the Strad man locally. He's got that
yeah.
Lamborghini that is
yeah.
orange. And, of course, obviously, I like orange cars. He had it wrapped purple for a little bit, and then now he's got a weird purple, white, black camo thing that, love it or hate it, you're never going to miss that car.
No
and
kidding.
Yet, underneath it, it's an orange Lamborghini, which you know will be a sellable color.
Yep.
So that's,
yep.
yeah, there's some real flexibility. I feel like there's more flexibility in wrapping than there is in dipping, but I see the benefits of both. I get it. There's a way to there's I feel like there's more of a DIY play element in the plastidip. Just go to your driveway and try something out. Whereas you're probably not going to do that with a wrap. Whereas you can take it to somebody and get a car wrapped really nicely and make it look very different, which is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. All right. That's kind of interesting. Plastidipping is permanent, though. You're committing. You're really
no. You can peel it. You can peel it. You can get, yeah, you can get the edge of it. You can peel it off. Eventually you can, I mean, it's kind of like, I forget how to describe it, but you can actually start working the edge of it, and then it rolls off in those little rubber balls. You actually can take it off.
Does it not take the clear coat with it and
no, it doesn't. It doesn't. You can take it off, and it theoretically is no more damaging than a wrap, but it's not coming off in the big, huge sheets either. It's a much more involved process to get it back off of there than the big sheets that would peel off for a normal wrap. But it definitely comes off.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Good to know. All right. What else? What else?
Andreas wrote in, and he was talking about the really cool video that the Gears and Gasoline guys did for us. And thank you again, guys, for doing it. It really is very cool. And he was, of course, noticing, because we haven't done a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff before, of course, and there's all of our gear being shown off there. And he was noting our new little camera, which is actually a Panasonic Lumix G7. We bought a little one on purpose in order to have 4K, but to still have something really small we could mount on the exterior of the car. So that's there. And we also, you noticed, put Canon lenses on it, which made you ask, what adapter are we using? I swear by the Metabones adapters. Their adapters are awesome. They're very tight fit. They are perfect for those big Canon lenses. We've got the nice L-series lenses, and I swear by those Metabones. You can get them with or without the light increase and so the speed booster of it. The speed booster is more than twice as expensive. If you need that for your lens, you need a really fast lens. The speed booster is great. It's twice as much money. You can get the standard without, and it still works all the electronics of your lens, which is awesome. It's still a fairly expensive adapter, but anything the camera does, it'll tell the lens and vice versa. So that's the great thing about those. If you're looking at an adapter, that's your primary question, and that's what I would go for.
I've been called out by Tyler, and I'm hoping this wouldn't happen, but it did. He got me.
Okay.
He said, here's a Paul question. Which would you rather own, the Honda CR-Z or the Kia Soul? Like, dang it. Somebody finally called me out on this. I don't know. Yeah. I don't
Random cars you recommend. There they are.
I love the personality of both. I'm going to go for the CR-Z because the Soul I really enjoy renting. I just I don't know if I'd want to live with it all the time and own one. The CR-Z I could see myself owning because manual transmission and you can track it and it's you know, all those kinds of things. A lot sportier, more fun. I think I'm leaning towards CR-Z, but my love for the Soul remains. So it's dang it.
It's deep and it's real. It's frightening. It's deep and it's real for sure. Yeah.
Another Kia T-shirt. We're just like giving a marketing gold here.
I don't know that it's gold. We're giving out something, though. I think we're actually over an hour already, so we probably should wrap it up. But did you have any other questions you wanted to cover?
I'll leave it there. I'll leave the getting called out on that one. I'll leave it there for now. But yeah, thank you guys for great questions. Just you've bowled us over here. It's amazing.
We're going to have to do an all-question podcast here shortly. And keep in mind, when we hit – this is the early 180s. I think it's 182. When we hit podcast number 200, we will do an all-question podcast that will be an all non-car question podcast, just like we did at the 100 mark. So that will happen. But keep burying us in car questions between now and then. We do love them. Feel free to post repeats. We see the repeats. They do work their way to the top of the pile. It's just a matter of time. So thank you guys for also all of your car debates, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or through our website at everydaydriver.com. And I will say one more time, if you're curious what's on season one of television, that's now posted on the website and will find its way to YouTube for those of you that don't have Velocity. If you do have Velocity, thank you for DVRing and telling friends. And all of that helps us do more for season two and more for the web in general.
Agreed. Well, thank you guys so much again. And we really appreciate of you listening and watching and following along. Until next time. Cheers.